Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:11 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time, and today is August 18th. I thought we'd kick off today looking at Apple. It was up slightly, but the big psychological level is less a price level and more about the market cap, because the market cap is now at 1.976 trillion. And I think there's some reticence on behalf of investors to be the first to pay for a stock that's worth 2 trillion. So we're quite likely to have some additional pause, but there is still a lot of momentum pushing through in terms of enthusiasm for stay-at-home winners, and then also for the kinds of loss-making companies or companies that are marginal in terms of profitability but promise growth. Tesla obviously is the totem pole for those types of investments, and the share was up again in here today. Now, it has gone from less than 500 to almost 2,000 in the space of 6 months, so it's obviously an incredible acceleration. And it's an acceleration regardless of how you look at it, whether you look at it on a log scale chart or a nominal scale. The pace of the advance that we've seen in the last few months, and particularly since the middle of 2019, in fact surmounts the acceleration that we had initially when it broke out of its range in 2012 and early 2013. And it's on the assumption that battery ventures are now worth something, and that internal combustion engine production is worthless. So that's obviously a significant factor in the way that people are viewing the outlook for these types of companies. Then you have the semiconductor sector, and these are companies that are viewing the evolution of the battery market and the requirement for batteries that they need some form of power management hardware and software. Also, that the cars of the future are going to be festooned with electronic gadgets, and everything from the potential that all cars are going to be connected to the internet, whether that is through 4G or 5G. We've already seen that some of that has been introduced. There are going to be much more entertainment options inside the vehicles. And then, of course, there are going to be the potential, at least, that with 5G, you're going to have more autonomous control. That's obviously still a promise, but these do represent growth factors, because one thing we know, for example, with Tesla, the number of cameras inside each car or outside the cars, the electronic mirrors, the big screen that each one of the vehicles has, these are all big pieces of electronic tech that is helping to drive the enthusiasm for the kinds of suppliers for both semiconductor digital tech but also analog tech. And that's one of the reasons why Microchip Technologies has been pushing higher recently. It's also just released a new computer vision chip, and computer vision is really extremely important when we start to think about the potential for vehicles to see around them, whether that is using LiDAR or cameras like Tesla does, or then when we think about the automation of the supply chain. There's the buzzword in the corporate world has been resiliency. And resiliency is really all about decoupling from China and moving production elsewhere to have multiple production regions. Whether they still produce in China for Europe and domestically, they're going to look then also at having production elsewhere. So then the question is, where is that elsewhere? But the clear potential is that future supply chains, future manufacturing is going to be more automated. And if you're going to have more automation, then you need more computer vision to see what's going on. And that is obviously an additional factor that is really quite important. Now, when we then think about everything else, that's going on in the technology sector? Well, it's been pivotal in the strength of the Nasdaq, and the Nasdaq was up in additional positive territory today and pushed on to new high ground. And that's a really quite impressive rebound from the brief sojourn back below 11,000 last week. It could quite easily have failed to sustain the upward break, but it rebounded in emphatic fashion. In fact, this little range has been both shorter and shallower than either of the last two significant ranges, and that suggests that the pace of the advance is picking up. The demand for technology shares or for stay-at-home success stories has been one of the primary factors behind the continued demand for U.S. equities. The total value of all foreign holdings of U.S. assets is in the region of about 8.6 trillion, but that was at the end of 2019. It could quite easily be more than that right now. Now, that has been a contributing factor behind the resiliency of the US dollar. But the dollar broke down in here today, and that's a clear resumption of the downtrend by the dollar index. Now, the euro is right in the region of 120, so it's a psychological level where investors and traders will be a little reticent to again be the first to pay 120 for the euro. But the most important point is that it has clearly broken the downtrend. There was a rivetingly consistent downtrend between 2018 and the beginning of the coronavirus crisis. One of the primary factors behind the strength of the dollar over the course of 2016 and 17 had been the fact that the Federal Reserve was raising interest rates, reducing the size of its balance sheet simultaneously. That contributed to the pop on the upside for high yield spreads in 2018, the freezing up of the repo market in 2019. Then we were on the cusp of a recession when the coronavirus crisis erupted. But those factors certainly helped to support the dollar today. And then, of course, you had the additional point that technology had continued to represent an increasingly large weighting in U.S. equities and contributed to significant outperformance. That remains the case today. And that is also representative of additional demand for dollars to buy those shares. But since the beginning of the coronavirus crisis, there has been an extraordinary, and that is the wrong chart, and that's the wrong one as well. This one is, I think, also relevant. It is the number of the price of used cars is in fact increasing. When we look at foreign buyers of US assets, that has been going higher. Now, here we go. This one is the supply of money. Well, the USA has been much more proactive in terms of increasing the size of its balance sheet. In fact, when we look at the total assets of central banks, they've gone up by about 7 trillion. The Federal Reserve has added more than 3 trillion of that. So the Federal Reserve's actions have just about equaled the combined actions of every other major central bank. And that represents a massive additional supply of dollars. Then we have the, I think, additional point that the interest rate differential has been almost completely eroded. So that then represents an additional headwind for the dollar. The euro in particular is doing well because of all these factors, but also because the eurozone has begun to coalesce around the idea that punishing the periphery through fiscal consolidation is not conducive to building a federal state, and that is the end objective. So they are now looking more at assistance measures and supportive measures to growth. Of course, growth is not one of the ECB's mandates, but it is certainly something that has or will be at the front of the minds of every politician in the region as they attempt to rebuild from the coronavirus. And the coronavirus challenge has not been completely overcome in Europe. There are cases rising again in a number of countries. That means that social distancing measures that have been in place now for months are going to continue for a while longer. Scientists, however, are learning more about the virus every day. I think, fear about looking at some of these success stories on the vaccine front is that their shares have pretty much stopped going up. There are over 100 vaccines in production or in are being researched or in trials right now. And what that really suggests is that by the time an increasing number of these are permissioned, and they are all subject, well, at least a large number of them are subject to accelerated approval mechanisms, the world is going to be floating in vaccines a year from now. And that's not particularly good for profitability. So there'll be an initial bump for the company that gets the first one, but that doesn't mean that they're going to make money indefinitely off these solutions. So I think the much more important characteristic here is that when we look at the proof of concept that the introduction of genetically based vaccines represents for the entire biotechnology sector, then that is the kind of bull case that will be particularly important in 2021. Generally speaking, healthcare doesn't do especially well heading into a US election for the simple reason that they tend to get beaten up by politicians who call out the high cost of healthcare and blame it on pharmaceutical companies. Obviously, it's a much more nuanced problem than simple drug costs, but they are an easy punch bag, and not least because of the large sticker price for a lot of the various drugs. One thing, though, that we are definitely seeing is that there is a continued drive to dematerialize every kind of tool that we have become accustomed to using. We've seen that already with record players, with books, but increasingly, what we're also seeing is that technology companies are moving into the healthcare sector, and this represents a massive source of data, and the parsing of data, the creation of products based upon the conclusions reached from parsing that data, is something that the big technology companies excel at. And then they also have this massive installed base of phones, and healthcare would represent a very significant additional reason to go out and spend the money on a new phone, which is now north of $1,000. Well, we looked at Apple already because it has been such a driver of performance. Then we also have Samsung. Now, there is a competition among the various handset providers to have the best camera. Now, that is on the superficially to appeal to the selfie generation, but there is the potential that these very powerful cameras can be used for as diagnostic tools. The trans or the what was the X Prize to create a diagnostic tool ended in 2017. It was a partial success. Now they can use smartphone cameras to diagnose diabetes with 80% efficiency. Google's algorithm has been proven to be more effective at trained readers of X-rays. So these are the kinds of innovations that are happening on an increasingly, I think, impressive acceleration curve. It does suggest that if we simply play the exponential curve forward, that within a decade, a lot of the the medical procedures, particularly from a diagnostic perspective, and routine exams can be performed by your phone. And that is obviously something that could be quite beneficial for the manufacturers of phones, the producers of the software, but perhaps not great news for the kinds of companies that produce the diagnostic equipment that we use today. Philips, for example, is a big one of those, and the share, excuse me, the share has been really quite choppy over the course of the last few years, but it has at least broken out of its base formation and now does look susceptible to some consolidation. One thing that we can also think about is that a large number of the providers of these types of machines are in Europe. Siemens, as a big industrial, is also right in the region of a previous peak. Now, this is a condition that we've seen with a large number of these types of shares. So there is the potential that it is device manufacturers are going to be at the and I'm thinking about Fresenius, which is one of the big manufacturers of dialysis machines in Germany. And the share has been trending down already for 3 years. And this has been a significant retracement again in here over the last couple of weeks. These, I think, are shares that are going to have to adapt to this new reality. It's the real potential that there is going to be significant disruption in this sector. But there's also disruption in the emerging markets, particularly with the dollar continuing to decline, because some currencies are doing worse than the dollar. The Brazilian real is it really does look like just a consolidation for the dollar. But when we look at it against a recently strong currency like the euro, then the real is breaking down. The Turkish lira is also breaking lower. So there is obviously a clear challenge here because these countries are going to see their US dollar denominated debt become a really quite significant burden. Whereas where we see other countries, and the South African rand was steadier today, but it's got a lot of work to do to convince anyone that it's going to do better in the medium term. The Indian rupee has been appreciating now for most of the last 3 or 4 months. It obviously needs to do better than it has done, but it is not breaking down. And the Nifty index has popped on the upside in here today. And it is now back above its trend mean. So this has been an impressive rebound off the lows. Now, when we think about the parsing or the differentiation between emerging markets, there are going to be clear winners and losers. And it is primarily in Asia where we can see that currencies are appreciating. Now, the Asia dollar index is heavily weighted by the renminbi, and the renminbi is steadying against the US dollar, but not so much against the euro. So this is much more about a dollar weakness story than a strong renminbi story. The potential here is that we're in a similar situation to what we had in the early 2000s and again immediately after 2008, where the dollar trended down in a really quite profound fashion, and then that helped to stoke investment demand for emerging markets and for anywhere that represented a currency hedge. And of course, the primary hedge so far has been gold. Gold prices are back to $2,000 and are closing above the 2,000 level in here today. This has been an impressive rebound from the low put in just about a week ago. But we are still due some consolidation. Now, of course, there is the potential that gold could accelerate like either Apple or Tesla. But Personally, I would prefer not to see that because, well, I don't have a position anymore. Well, that's one reason, but the reality is that we're due consolidation. A consolidation would be healthy, and it would suggest that we have a medium-term bull market environment, that we get a little bit of back and fill in terms of the trend is a healthy scenario, particularly in view of the fact that we're still consolidating in the region of the previous all-time peak. It's worth reminding ourselves that the peak previously was around $1,900, and now we're getting some consolidation. But then we also have the gold shares, and they didn't quite hold their pop on the upside in here today. This is still a range. The range is relatively similar size to the one put in between May and June, and as long as that is all it is, we're still in a very consistent advance and really a sustained move below the trend mean. And I think more correctly, really, $30 would be required to question the potential for additional upside. Then, as the dollar continues to deteriorate, high beta trades on it are improving. Bitcoin has broken on the upside, and it's now back above the 12,000 level. Now, we do have a short-term overbought condition, and it was in negative territory in here today, so we may see some consolidation in this area. But as long as it is holding the move above the 10,000 level, well, then we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Ethereum has been outperforming, and it has rallied more impressively on the upside, but it was also in negative territory in here today. And the big test will be whether it can sustain this breakout from what is effectively a more than 2-year base formation. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.